All right, I apologize. I'm really, really sorry. I apologize unreservedly. I offer a complete and utter retraction. The imputation was totally without basis in fact and was in no way fair comment and was motivated purely by malice. And I deeply regret any distress that my comments may have caused you or your family. And I hereby undertake not to repeat any such slander at any time in the future.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So damn nerdy. I'll take you to the comic shop. Show you all the...
Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome out to Beyond the Gauntlet. And we are coming to you semi-live from 14 Mill Street in Orangeville. I was going to say Owen Sound, Ontario. No, screw that place. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd. I'm joined by my very own quarter junkie.
I'm Chris Peddle, owner and operator of the Gauntlet Comics and Games.
And a guy I've never seen play a video game yet.
Oh, but I've played plenty. I'm Jeff Dehan.
And, of course, our resident bald guy again. I'm sorry, I just don't have anything for you yet.
That's Jamie McBurney, and I've got Pac-Man fever.
That's true. So, yes, we're coming to you from...
There's a pill for that.
It's causing a rash.
Well, we're going to be talking because E3 has just happened. Hope you guys got a lot of cool news. I know my wallet's most certainly hurting for PS4 and Xbox One pre-orders. Because I know they're not going to cede me a console. I know it. Anyway, moving on. We're going to be talking about video games. And because, well, I've talked about this topic before on The Prototype with Handsome Tom, I decided, well, it's time to revisit here with a couple of more nerds who may not necessarily have played some of these games or maybe have played games that I haven't. So we're going to be talking about comic book video games. The good, the bad, the ugly. This year has been particularly good with Injustice. We got Batman Arkham Origins coming out. We got the Deadpool video game, which I think is out or coming soon.
It's coming. It's pretty soon, like within the next month or two, I've been hearing.
I think June 21st, yeah. I think. So remind me to call my rep at Activision and get a copy. So I guess where do we start with this? I guess what was everyone's first video game comic book one you played? I remember playing Spider-Man and the Sinister Six on the NES by LJN.
LJN, the worst
video game company ever.
My first one was the X-Men arcade game.
Yes,
side scroll and beat 'em up where you could play one of six characters, including Dazzler and Nightcrawler and Colossus and Cyclops and Wolverine and Storm, I believe, was the last one.
Yes. Now, you know, there's a reason why I love that game and I hate that game. And I'll tell you why. There's a convention that happens in Maryland. DC area. Virginia, that's it. Maryland, something else. And it's called MAGFest.
Yep.
I went back in 2009. Me and about 6,000 other nerds. What sound does Colossus make when he powers up? Every 5 minutes. Middle of the night. Didn't matter. And we do it at every concert. That's what we would do.
Oh, dear.
The Colossi are angry.
Colossi.
Oh, my God. Just hear it everywhere you go. Guaranteed. If someone did it, you hear it echo down the hall. Every MAGFest, it's a tradition. We do it at PAX now.
I don't know. I always preferred. I am Magneto, master of magnet. That was my favorite.
Prepare to die.
Some of the best voice acting. But again, like when you were a kid, you saw this and you'd be like, oh my God, this is a game that is not LJN. You know, so I can probably achieve something at this. And then, of course, now, Chris, was your memory of the four or like the double wide?
Oh, no. I had the double. I played the double wide.
The double wide.
Eight or six controller one. Oh, it was.
And it's like, that was like the thing. You'd go to an arcade and you'd be like, now, okay, which X-Men are they going to have? And it would be like the Holy Grail would be like the double wide. And you're like, it's just me and my brother or me and my friend. But hey. We have that option.
That meant they had.
Now, there's
the
a lot of
roster.
Swinging room, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. First. Now, are we going superhero or just comic book related?
Comic book.
My first comic book related would probably be the first Ninja Turtles game on the NES.
Oh.
Which they did get that, exactly.
I've beaten that game once, and that's all I will ever need to do in my life.
Yeah.
Sewer seaweed.
In that one though. The second and third were actually a lot better. And
yes.
Me and my cousin. Many a sleepless night staying up two-player on that thing, because as soon as you died, you could be one of the other turtles.
Yeah.
And the second completely redeemed it, and the third even more so. It's like when they made the second Ninja Turtles game, they got it right, and then they did the third, and it was just even better.
Yeah, yes. I think it was called the Manhattan Project.
I know, which is great, third, which is my favorite. Disturbing, yeah. But true.
Although, fantastic. If you played that game as Raphael, you could just spam his drill attack and
he kind of did the M. Bison Raiden thing where he just go back and forth. Whereas you got Leonardo, he just kind of stood in one spot with his blades out and spun.
Or that stupid kangaroo kick from Michelangelo.
Oh, yeah.
Donatello's wasn't bad. He kind of did a spin like Raphael, but he didn't have the distance that Raphael had.
Yeah, exactly.
I love how this is building into the nostalgia thing, because that's the thing for me as well was like, you know, I spent a lot of time in arcades when I was a kid. Big surprise is like a nerd thing. Yeah. The other reason was that I didn't have like a Nintendo or anything until I was like 15 or 16. So all my options were the arcade or our crappy 386 that we had turbocharged to a 486.
Whoa.
And hold on, I had the Ultra Ninja Turtles, the original Ninja Turtles game. Whoa. You thought it was awful on the NES? I had that mother on a like 5 floppy disks. That you would load in, and it was monochrome.
Insert disc two.
And this is the thing, though. I had no other options. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, 5,000 people, 2 traffic lights. My only options were Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego? And let me tell you, it's not as much fun to dig through that damn giant dictionary as it is to just throw in and try to figure out how the hell I was supposed to play this Ninja Turtles game. That was the where I learned how to camp. Pretty much, where I would just stand up, and because Donatello had the long reach,
mm-hmm.
So the first boss, which was as far as I could get, because as soon as I got into the turtle van, I had no idea what the hell was going on. So that's the worst one. The best one, though, would be when I started noticing the Capcom fighters.
Oh, yeah.
Like the Capcom X-Men, like Children of the Atom, mm-hmm. Another game,
or
again.
The Infinity Gems.
Yes. I had Children of the Atom on a computer as well for like my 586. We were moving on up to the east side there.
I forgot they ported that.
Yeah, they ported
God.
It. And I learned that Iceman's what's his Arctic Assault?
Yeah.
If you blocked that, the chip damage that it would do mm-hmm. would wipe out the other person's bar, because they just threw it in a disc and they're like,
which is
done.
Funny because then Magneto inherited the same chip attack later.
Yeah, and it was so much fun to play.
Although, if you had Iceman's shield, you couldn't be chip damaged.
Yes.
Because it was so far apart
yes.
from his body. Cheap fuckers. But, oh yeah, I remember playing that in the arcade.
I'm loving this nerd conversation.
Those were the days. And you also had Marvel versus Street Fighter.
Yep.
X-Men versus Street. I don't really see why they did that. Then I guess Marvel versus Capcom, I guess if you wanted to
maybe
keep
they
going.
Just felt like they didn't have a big enough roster, so they thought if they combined it.
That's all
I can think of, which it's hard to look back at like Marvel or even just X-Men and think of them not having a big enough roster
to
be able to fill a game.
Well, I think a lot of it is people are like, I want to play Hulk. I want to play Spider-Man, you know, so they had to get in because they're not X-Men.
I think it was kind of a niche sort of thing too, where like, when they first came out, how awesome would it be to be like, oh my God, we can have Spider-Man versus Blanka or
yeah.
Ryu
oh,
versus
yeah.
whoever, you know,
Captain America.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like the thought of that, you know, at the time when it was coming out had to be just a complete nerdgasm.
But they put some pretty stupid characters in some of these games.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, let's look at War of the Gems, for example. Who the f*** is Shumer Gorath and why do I care?
This is my theory with that. Is what happened, and I think I might have read something about this, is Marvel gave a book of characters to the Japanese programmers.
Here, pick them.
And they're like, we must have Wolverine, Spider-Man, Captain America, we must have them.
Oh, and the Japanese were like, and, oh, tentacles!
Well, they're like this character looks
wow,
really bizarre. I knew as soon as I said it, I'm like, I'm wandering into this morass, but I just kept going. My conversation is steeped in blood too far already. It would be too much to go over. That's my terrible Macbeth. But yeah, it's the same. It's where they had these characters and they just wanted to throw them in. And I loved using like Blackheart and Shuma Gorath because they're just these really bizarre characters to see them like thrown in randomly. Because I would have conversations speaking about like you're saying about like what nerdgasms about the characters. Mm-hmm. I remember very clearly when Marvel vs. Capcom came out, my brother saw it first, and he would, like, he went, as soon as he got home, he came and found me, and he was like, they put Captain Commando in this game. Captain Commando and Spider-Man are in the same game. And, like, I didn't believe him. I'm like, you can be Mega Man, and Mega Man can fight Spider-Man? That's insane. And still to this day, like, I was glued to my computer every time they would announce a new Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 character, because I'd be like,
oh,
which?
Yeah, when that came out,
yeah, they would do the promo videos.
I was following that, too.
And I was like, holy crap, Rocket Raccoon? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of like, all the weird characters to pick.
But it's
that's
weird.
Part of the fun of it, though.
Yeah, and because I'd play it, and I was actually just playing it today, and I'm like, this makes sense now. It's really... It's almost connected to, like, Marvel's long game, mm-hmm. because all the characters they picked are coming out in movies.
Yes.
Like, they've got the Guardians of the Galaxy, the cosmic stuff, they've got Nova, they've got Super Skrull, all these characters mm-hmm. who are...
Doctor Strange was added to their second release, Nova, which yeah. is going to be a movie.
I feel like not just necessarily on the Marvel side, I feel like they were almost doing it just for the sake of, let's see what we can have fun with. Like, on the Capcom side for the re-release, yeah. they had Phoenix Wright on there.
Yes.
He's a lawyer.
And
he's
Arthur,
an anime lawyer.
But Phoenix Wright is so weirdly playable. And the thing I liked about Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, which is probably my current favorite. I mean, I haven't played much Injustice, so it's on my list. But I love Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Oh.
I love playing that game. I love trying to see all the... They've got these really bizarre character things that you have to do. Like, if you're playing Frank West from Dead Rising, you have to level up by taking pictures after a combo. Where you have to do a 5-hit combo, and then if you do, like, Fireball Special... he takes a picture and it, like, levels up his attacks, and it's just
bizarre.
Oh,
right, yeah, because it represents the PP meter from
yeah.
the first game.
Yeah, and it's awesome. But I think that's one of those things that there's – it allows people to see comics from a different perspective. So mm-hmm. people will be like, oh, I know this character now. And I think that's an option as well. And I think what it does with that game is it shows people, like, well,
but it's
check
more or less
one.
Taken until this console generation for them to get it right. I mean, my experience as a game journalist, I played a number of really shitty games when it comes to comic book ones. I mean, one of the early ones was the one released by the famous Rainbow, LJN, Wolverine Antimantium Rage. Why do your claws hurt when they come out?
I forgot about that one.
I always think you have to say that one, like, Adamantium Rage! It just can't be.
I'm trying to think of other... There was X-Men and Spider-Man versus Arcade.
Yo, yeah.
It's a good game, but is it hard.
Then there's... then they did that, like, X-Men Fighter Final Dimension, I think it was called.
Oh, yeah. And,
oh, man, yeah.
And that was for the PS1, right?
Yeah, PS1, and you could be like Forge or like
awesome. Shard.
Or yeah, or like Shard or Shatterstar was in it. And it's just like, it was, again, a decent premise that was just poorly executed.
Let's not forget that
Mutant Academy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
That's it.
Up until Arkham Asylum, there had never been a good Batman game. But there had been many, many attempts.
89 Sunsoft.
Yeah, 89, yeah.
The Sunsoft Batman game. It's
Batman Returns Sega CD.
Yeah, yeah.
Just as good.
But, I mean, ultimately, nothing really captured what
exactly.
being Batman is. Those other games, you could plug in another character and it would be about the
and
same.
And I'm not even talking old. Like, the tie-in game for Batman Begins was horrendous.
Oh, God, yeah.
You
oh,
know, like, so this isn't even a... They needed the technology to catch up. They just didn't get the bat.
Well, you know what? Yeah. A lot of times when I find they release games games based on movies in general, the
anything
games
licensed.
Just ask.
Yeah,
the only exception to the rule is the Wolverine Origin game,
yes.
which so much better than the was Wolverine Origins
well,
movie.
Well, that's because it actually had nothing to do with the movie other than the title.
I could make an argument for licensed movie games. I could say the Jurassic Park games were good. The ones
yeah,
on the Genesis?
The Genesis ones were solid.
And even the one that came out on PC, and I can't remember what the hell it was called, it was okay. The storyline was okay. The one that had Mimi Driver in it or
yeah.
something in it. I can't remember.
My favorite thing, the Sega CD Jurassic Park game, had this bizarre option where you could just, in the first like 5 minutes, you could find a rock, you could pick up a rock, you could hit the computer with the rock, and then the game would stop. And
yep.
that was part of the program where they're just like, oh, now the game's over. You lost.
Now, have you actually
stuff with
that
rocks,
game?
Caveman? No.
Old school
I
Easter
did it
eggs.
Once with a friend of mine, we speed ran it 5 hours. The only way we could beat it was drinking. We sat there and got loaded at my wife's house for playing this. Now, Blair, come here. Tell them the story of what I did to the lawn. Okay, so we're going to fight.
This sounds,
This is what led to me play Jurassic Park, because Blair didn't want me outside anymore.
Special guest star Blair.
Here,
Blair, what he did on the lawn, put the kids to bed.
Nope, you got to talk right into it. That's
in his infinite wisdom, he decided to come outside to the bonfire, but it was wet outside, as it is very much today, and all of our wood was wet. So, as the wonderfully creative native man he is, he decided to use a full thing, the red canister of gas.
Oh, no.
So, we have
Indian fire trick.
Yes, we have some papers going, and he lights the end of the spout on fire. And so now we have a flaming gas can, and he drops it to the ground. Then he decides, oh, I've got a drink in my hand. It is a jug of milk. I'm going to put out the fire with milk.
Now, for those of you that know me, I love milk. Like, catastrophically love milk.
So him sacrificing milk was a huge thing.
It was.
You're why there's warnings on things.
Oh, it gets better.
Oh, no. The milk did not put the fire out. So we have flaming gas can on the ground, starting to catch the grass on fire. Then he decides it needs to be further away from the group. I'm going to kick said flaming gas can.
This is how YouTube videos start, but yeah.
Which causes the gas can to go up in there, make a spiral of flaming gas on the lawn. So the next, my parents come home probably 2 days afterwards, because at the time I was still living with them. And Dad's like, what the hell did you do to the lawn? There are spiral burn marks all over the lawn. And Michael tried to cleverly disguise that he had burned the whole end of the yellow and red gas can by, did you cut off the end of the plastic?
Yeah, I tried.
Yeah, not so successful.
Yeah, so after all this has happened, we're up there gaming, and my friend Scott, he's like, okay, Mike, we are going to go inside now, and that's what led to us playing Jurassic Park. It's like, you're not allowed outside anymore.
I'm not going
to
lie, that story is metal as hell.
Oh, and then I started prank calling people, because in my phone, I have a variety of famous people. Some famous voice actors and a lot of porn stars. So I decided my infinite wisdom, I'm going to call my friend Brandon. So after this lawn is on fire, I prank call my friend Brandon, like, Brandon, the lawn's on fire. Where were you? I could have died. Where is my Batman?
Jurassic Park. That's just the
the lawn's on fire. There's raptors after me. Help.
What else am I? And this is what I find fascinating about video games is, They give everyone their a way to share experiences,
oh, yeah,
be they good, be they flaming gas can, be they whatever. Mm-hmm. But they're much more participatory than just comic books. Mm-hmm. So, like, you can play through, like, that's what, like, Let's Play videos, right? Like, there's tons of Let's Play videos for mm-hmm. Batman, for, like, for the secret elements, and that's participatory in that comic book mm-hmm. universe. So I think what they allow people to do is to get in on that action, like, to be able to play together to mm-hmm. say, you know, holy crap, look at that, holy crap, this is terrible, something along those lines.
Can a comic book necessarily bring out the seething frustration and anger that you can get from a level that you can't get past?
And yeah, my brother is a video game junkie. He would always come over and visit me in Japan and come with an empty suitcase, come back with
loaded.
A full suitcase
of
everything he could possibly find. The worst story that he had, his worst story, and I'll go with my worst story, because apparently we're into horror story territories now, was he was playing a Capcom, one of the Capcom fighters. It was
Steve
one of the,
movie, the game?
No, but we have that.
Love that one.
We have that one. Digitized Raul Julia kicking ass against Jean-Claude Van Damme. How can you go wrong? Tish, that's a fire. Tish, that's a torpedo. he got really frustrated, and that he still tells the story where he's like, yeah, it was like 1 a.m. and I just threw it out in the yard and left it out there overnight. All games must spend a night in the yard. Another one was me. I was fighting for the Dreamcast, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, excellent underrated Capcom fighting game.
Which is now available for download on PSN.
Yes, and you should get it. It's amazing. But I remember that was the one time where I was like just frustrated and took a piece of drywall off the wall. That was like the most outraged I've ever gotten in participatory.
I saw this one time. This was with my adoptive brother, Tyler. We're playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3, which has Spider-Man in it.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
And we're playing it on the fat PS2 in our place. And he gets so frustrated. He throws a controller. It explodes. That's not the best part. He runs over and football kicks the PS2 into the wall. And he's like... Sorry. He kicks it and then goes, oh my god, what have I done?
And this is the participatory culture we're talking about. This is the closest thing our nerdy generation has to war stories. We're like, and man, I was trying to fight Bowser, and let me tell you. Yeah. Bowser's in the trees, man.
When we were in
Bowser
the trenches.
Bowser don't surf.
When we were in the trenches of the Mushroom Kingdom, man.
So this is what again, looking at this idea of participatory culture and watching these two gentlemen on this side of the table here, we had a wicked match of X-Men versus Street Fighter going on. There was some trash talking.
Oh yeah,
it was beautiful.
It's customary.
It was beautiful to watch, but it's that, you know, using those characters to really connect and to sort of get another way of experiencing those characters, I think is a really essential part of video games. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting that I think it started off, because I know a couple of our stories that we at the outset were about being in the arcade. But at a certain point, arcades died off.
And now we have Xbox Live.
And now
PSN,
we've got, like Xbox Live and PSN.
It just doesn't feel the same, though.
There actually was a documentary done by a guy, I think his name was Ian Cofino, and it's called I Got Next. And it's a documentary about the fight game community.
Nice.
And that, it says something so much. I mean, especially when you and I were playing, you'd put your quarters on the machine, whoever lost... I got next.
Yes.
You could do that. And nowadays, you go on Xbox Live, it's like, oh, you know, it's like racist, homophobic, or whatever, slurs. You wouldn't do that in the arcade.
No,
for
no.
For example, I wouldn't walk up to you and say, hey, guess what, you giant flaming whatever. You wouldn't do that. I'd be like, all right, you beat me, cool, handshake, and you'd walk away.
Yeah.
It wasn't even Yo Mama crap.
I actually worked at an arcade for a year when I lived down in the States, and... there were, you know, all the hardcore gamers, we actually did after our gaming tournaments, just to get all the hardcore gamers in to play Mortal Kombat 2, Mortal Kombat 3, Marvel versus Capcom, X-Men versus Street Fighter. Heck, we even had, Time Crisis and Time Crisis 2 competitions.
Oh, yeah. Yes, who could get the farthest? The duck.
Oh yeah. I mean, and like this the culture was so much more different. It was vibrant, and it encouraged social interaction with things like Xbox Live and the PlayStation and stuff. You're just another face in a house somewhere, and you don't really care about the person because you don't have to see them.
It's the opposite of social interaction. It's like the internet. Everybody will slam everybody else on the internet because they're doing it from the safety of their home, and you don't have to see their face or even know their name or anything. And it's that anonymity that attracts people and brings out all those, you know, racial slurs and homophobic behavior,
for lack of a better phrase.
Well, it's because they have, because in real life, if you went up to a guy at an arcade machine and was like, you know, what up, what up, turn around and punch in the face.
Yeah, well,
rightly so.
What was there's the I really like this, that there was a Penny Arcade comic years and years ago, where it was the equation of internet. Yes. It was anonymity plus audience equals douchebag.
Yeah.
And normal person plus anonymity plus audience equals utter douchebag.
Yep.
And that's pretty much what I think that is.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the lack of the arcades, and I honestly think that that with these next generation console systems coming out and all the BS surrounding them right now, you might actually see a resurgence of arcades happening.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of cool, because look at what your store has now, thanks to me.
Exactly, arcade games. But there's also the one thing that my store also does is the board gaming community. And the board gaming community allows the social interaction again. You can smack talk over a board game just the same as you can smack over an arcade game.
Yeah.
But it's good, clean, just it's taunting, never... not necessarily vulgar and rude.
Well, it could be vulgar and rude, but at the same time, if you actually, it's not vengeful. If you actually felt like you offended the person, you'd probably feel bad. But that doesn't stop it from being vulgar, because it kind of depends on who the group is. If it's a vulgar group, they're not going to take offense to calling each other certain names or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not vengeful, like Mike said, which
it's just goes off of what you were saying, though. Yeah.
But board games are a great, tie into that, in that it is the same thing. It's kind of like the pre-arcade, in that, you know, you're still gaming together and you can still smack talk back and forth. It's just now suddenly you're putting quarters in a machine and doing that, you know?
So, like, let's say what you're saying about, like, being able to interact with people. What do you guys think it is that makes comic books so adaptable immediately to video games?
Oh, like, because stories are larger than life, and the fact that you can pull off more in a video game or on a page than you ever can with, like, any Hollywood budget.
Well, and there's also the effect of what person who has read a comic book or even remotely knows about comic books hasn't imagined being Superman or being Wolverine or being
the Punisher,
or being, you know, insert character's name here. And with a video game, when you get something like Batman, Arkham Origins or Arkham City, or you get, you know, the Deadpool video game, or you get any number of other games that have come out, you get to take on the persona of somebody that you admire and enjoy in the comic books, and you get to actually be them for a while. You get to experience what Superman went through. You get to experience what
But very few games
through.
Get it right.
Well, that's
the problem. Therein lies the problem.
Like, because one game that should be awesome, it should translate retarded easy, should be Iron Man.
You'd think so.
But Sega, you done f***ed up. Those games are terrible. The first two? I mean, the two, if you look at Don Cheadle, he looks dead. Like, he's zombie Don Cheadle delivering his lines.
Zom Cheadle. Thank you. This was me swinging at softballs.
Or the Avengers Battle for Earth, piece Connect game. Why?
Well, honestly, I think the entire motion capture thing is defeating the whole idea of video games in general.
But just imagine how cool it would be to have Wolverine claws, and you could, you know, snickety snick, and that would work. That might.
Sorry,
be cool.
I'm from the generation of gamers that I want a controller and arcade stick, and I want to sit on my ass and play a game. I don't want to actually get up and be the game. If I did I'd just go play a sport.
I kind of agree with Chris. Control. It's like if you wanted to actually act out the moves in Street Fighter, go sign up for Taekwondo or something, you know?
They did try it with the Dragon Ball Z game for the Kinect, and it was so stupid.
I think saying terrible Kinect game is like saying wet water for the most part. Like, you're not going to get something. But I think
Except
it's interesting.
Dance Central, the only
there
Kinect
are a couple. There's an exception to the rule. But with it is interesting, like you guys were saying, like that idea of how far people want to immerse yourself in the game, like how much of you want to be the superhero to this, like, are you there for the movement of it? Are you there for the visceral thrill of it? Or are you there for like the story or the experience of it? Because I think we're seeing recently a lot more as video game technology is increasing, and especially with comic book based games, a lot more emphasis on like cinematic storytelling. Mm-hmm. Like Chris, you were telling me about how Injustice has how many hours of cutscenes in it?
143 hours worth of cutscenes.
143 hours?
Minutes.
Sorry, minutes. Minutes. Okay, minutes. Minutes. Like, sorry, 143
that is a
minutes.
Big game.
That is some awesome.
Jeez, I thought I was
sorry,
done. 143
minutes of cutscenes in and around the story mode. And it spells out, what, which, by the way, if you haven't played
Injustice.
It should
take about 4 or 5 hours to beat it. Give
it
a
pick. But it's one of the most immersive Justice League stories I've ever had bore witness to. It's brilliantly
written. I'm
actually
glad you mentioned that, because a friend of mine, Jamie, who's the host of The Prototype, he's not a comic book guy. But me and him sat there and played this game for review, and he's like, man, I don't give a f*** comic books, but this is awesome. And it got someone into it. That's amazing.
Yes. One of the things that I love most about it, talking about the cutscenes in Injustice, is how seamlessly they blend into the fight. You know, like, I mean, if you know enough about games or you've played enough games, you can see where, you know, it goes from the cutscene to it. But it's just from the naked eye, it's just
it's a pretty
so
good transition.
Seamless, yeah. Such a seamless transition to go from these two characters talking to suddenly, okay, now I'm fighting.
Yeah,
you
and
know?
It's interesting to see how the advancements in technology do affect that type of story.
Because once upon a time, there was a 30-second load screen while you waited for the fight
or
to
exactly,
go.
Or the
and
entire,
like, wait,
like the plot of Captain America and the Avengers was like, tornado is over there, and that was it. And like that's all you had to go with. Do you think that the fundamental like difference in that is it better to have things laid out for you, or is it better? Because I know, for example, I really enjoyed Capcom's old Punisher arcade game from like 92 or 93, where player one was Frank Castle and player two was Nick Fury.
Yes.
And when Nick Fury went left and right, his eye patch would change sides, which was one of my favorites. Well, it's just like, because they can't do that with the sprites, but it's just awesome. Mm-hmm. But it's a really fun game, and it was just, I think, as immersive as something like Injustice, but I was filling in all the gaps. Mm-hmm. So I think both of them have, you know, something
I think
to offer.
It's a fine line.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, storytelling evolves as the medium changes.
Yeah, for sure.
And with a lot of the newer stuff, you can fill in a lot of storylines, a lot of gaps, a lot of have fun with it. In the older games, like Spider-Man versus the X-Men, I'd fill in a lot of gaps in my head.
For sure, yep.
Or you'd have another game, like, say, Spider-Man 2, which came out on the PS2, the GameCube, and I think the original Xbox.
Yeah,
quite possibly one of the best Spider-Man games.
Yeah, if not the best.
If not the best, yeah.
Because the only one that's ever came close, I might say, is Web of Shadows. But even then, it gets kind of stupid once you get to choose the Uber Spider powers or the Venom powers or whatever.
I don't know how many times in that game, you know, I'm just sitting there swinging through the city, and because to change from one costume to the other, it was pushing in the control stick. And you'd be swinging, and suddenly you'd be like, and change mid-swing, and you're like, what? I didn't do that. And it's just because, you know, that's the way the game's control was.
A game that came close to being just as good, but ultimately failed in the end, was the Amazing Spider-Man game. Because the first boss in the game, you're fighting a Reaper from Mass Effect.
Oh,
I'm not even kidding. It's so dumb.
You know, that game, like, I played Amazing Spider-Man, and I was like, I was awestruck that this game, I was like, oh my god, might this beat Spider-Man 2? And then I got playing it, and then it didn't.
It
came so close.
Once the gameplay gets in the way of the experience. I mean, what I was doing was going around, swinging around the city, stopping random crimes, but collecting the comic book pages.
Yes.
Because I was really bored. But when I started, go here to fight the lizard, or go here to do, like, okay, this is stupid. That, and although some of the pre-order bonuses for that game were kind of cool, because you could turn into Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Swing around.
Actually, it's really interesting you mentioned that. Yeah. Your Stan Lee was on helium. That was pretty awesome. But I remember one of my first moments, like you were talking about with that freedom, is I remember playing like the Amazing or the Spider-Man game for the Sega Genesis.
That's one of the most underappreciated ones.
That the first time that I started swinging around on the web, I'm like, this is really cool. And then, unfortunately, I had to keep playing the game and not just swing, you know, left and right on the web, which was fun as hell. But like, then you had to be like, oh, Mary Jane's timer, hit a bunch of boxes.
Oh, Mary Jane died again.
Yeah,
whoops.
Exactly.
And then you had to go back and refill your web.
In the meantime, Peter Parker just going, wee!
Yeah, I know. That was me as Spider-Man is just, wee, wee, as the world burns around me. I'm just like, but this is so much fun! So
I'm way up here. I'm okay.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting that we're at that stage now where, you know, there's so many different things that are happening with video game properties. And I think that we're in a certain... like, we're seeing, like, a Deadpool game, you know? We're seeing these characters and these games showing up that would never be imagined before. Yeah. And it's just really, you know, it's exciting to see that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a lot of epic failures that are coming out of that, I think. Mm-hmm. But I think it was like you were saying, too, the medium is changing, right?
Yeah, and it's nice that we're getting games like Batman from Rocksteady and all them developing those. One game that tried to clone it and actually did a pretty good job was the Captain America game.
Oh really?
It doesn't completely suck. It's worth a rental at least.
Which for comic book games is a pretty good recommendation.
That's actually kind of a high watermark there. But there's been some terrible ones like Fantastic Four on every system has been a complete.
I was extremely disappointed with the X-Men Destiny the game.
Boy, have I got stories about that one because Silicon Knights isn't around anymore.
So badly wanted a X-Men RPG. God, why can't one of these companies just make a good superhero RPG?
Do you want to know? Because I know.
Answer me. Riddle me this, Batman.
Okay, so a couple years ago, I was interviewing one of the developers for X-Men Destiny. This is before Silicon Knights went under. Since they don't exist anymore, this disclosure is now done. So, what happened is... I'm going into the interview, and I say to the guy, like, look, is this off the record? He's like, yes. Suck, dude. What happened? I want to be positive with this, but I'm having such a hard time. And he's like, all right, is this off the record? We're like, yes. They cut so much at the last minute. And if you've read these stuff on Kotaku, go back and read about this. They had to change, they had to focus their time between Eternal Darkness 2 and something else, and just some stuff just kept getting shelved and shelved. Like, originally, do you remember those challenge rooms?
Yes.
Those are going to be danger room things where you fought sentinels and shit. They cut so much crap. I'm like, they cut this, they cut that. And I'm like, no, really, dude? He's like, yes, this game should have been awesome. But I'm sorry, you know it. And I asked him, like, well, what was the point of this? Well, to try and give you something else. Because you know how you would collect pieces of costumes, right?
Yeah.
You were supposed to get much more powerful off that. That was going to be a completely new underlying subsystem. But they cut it. Like, there's so much of that game that should have been awesome. Now, I'll admit, that game's a guilty pleasure. I do enjoy it, but if you're going to buy a copy, buy it now. Because GameStop and EB were ordered to destroy all those copies. If you have one, hold on to it, because it might be worth something at some point someday. It's tragic.
Why do because like we've been groaning a lot, why do a lot of comic book games suck?
Licensing, because they don't have time.
So like, how, licensing how, like...
Okay, so let's say Green Lantern's a great example of this. Okay, all right. You have to have a movie out to coincide with the release. You have to develop for X amount of platforms.
Right.
And you have this much time. What's the problem in this equation?
Green Lantern.
Time. Yeah. Time.
I'd say Ryan Reynolds in his digital mask, but that's just me.
But the main problem, it comes down to time because developers don't have the time to make these things great. I mean, for example, a game like, say, Skyrim takes 5+ years to develop.
Right.
A game like Batman Arkham City took, I think, like three or four. Mm-hmm. They took the time. They had no, you must get this out for Dark Knight Rises. That's why we never got Batman games for Dark Knight or Dark Knight Rises.
And that's why the Avengers game got shelved before it even hit shelves, because they knew it was going to suck.
Yeah, exactly. Like, THQ held a lot of the licenses with Activision for these games, and they're like, this is going to suck, just let it go. Amazing Spider-Man came close to breaking the mold of not sucking, but it didn't in the end. Once again, time. And that's what kills a lot of development, is time.
I mean, the closest thing we've had to RPGs of the superhero nature are like X-Men Legends, X-Men Legends 2, and the Ultimate Alliance ones.
Right.
And you know what? They weren't shabby.
Justice League something or other.
League Heroes.
Heroes.
And actually,
Xbox.
I find that to be a very underrated game as well.
It's not even bad.
Fantastic, but... I enjoyed it personally.
It was okay. I mean, even on the PSP, it was okay.
But I would love to see them take the Marvel or the DC universe and not do something like Marvel Online or DC Online. No, I want like a Skyrim quality superhero RPG.
Or like Grand Theft Auto with Spider-Man.
Exactly. Yeah. I want something is immersive, of these hardcore RPGs.
I want Mass Effect type interaction and depth in an established universe.
Exactly. And I think the company that can crack this walnut and make a superhero RPG that's an immersive as a Mass Effect or a Skyrim.
BioWare, Bethesda.
They will kick some serious ass.
You know who I'd like to see a superhero game from, because I think they could pull it off? Naughty Dog. Naughty Dog's the guy who made The Last of Us. They've done Uncharted, Jack and Daxter. Mm-hmm. If you could take the Uncharted engine and put that in the Marvel Universe, do like a Punisher game with it.
Yeah.
Daredevil.
Yeah.
Just imagine how cool that could be.
Well, there's a lot of possibilities.
Even a Marvel game just with the street level heroes. Like, you know, why just a Daredevil game or a Punisher game? Why not like a
Marvel Knights
game? Exactly.
Thunderbolts.
Throw Elektra in there. Throw Luke Cage in there, you know? And just have all of them.
You know, like right now, for example, Marvel's got their Facebook Avengers game, which is basically you build your team up, level your team. It's kind of got what I'm hoping one of these games has, but in a very, very basic, Facebook game quality.
Right.
You pick a hero, they gain powers, you can outfit them with gear, yada, yada, yada. And it's extremely addictive daily game to go on and do for like half an hour to get your dailies out of the way. And then Marvel also has this new one they just launched on Steam, Marvel Heroes Online, which plays remarkably like playing a Diablo game, but with Marvel Heroes. There's that, but I want like an immersive, like those
single player or multiplayer.
No, I want it. I want my option. I want to be able to play it single player if I wanted to, or play it multiplayer if I wanted to. Because you know what, I don't like multiplayer being crammed down my throat until I'm ready for multiplayer.
See, that's what I didn't like about DC Online, is you're forced to be multiplayer, which sucks.
Right.
Which is exactly it. Like, it would have been a much better experience if I got to play it single player before I got. Because you get into multiplayer, and then you always get, like, people that just get in your way.
Well,
I just want to complete this mission. Let me complete this mission. But somebody's camping this mission. So I'm never going to complete this mission. Because the moment the boss spawns, another group who's been hanging here for God knows how long in game time,
they're just going to come here and do the raid and leave.
Exactly.
It's like World of Warcraft. And that's what I don't like about the idea of the multiplayer.
I'm probably part of the minority, but honestly, with a lot of games, I'm really not a fan of online. And a lot of it comes back to the smack talking and everything and the anonymity we were talking about earlier. But it's like, I miss games, and this is part of why I loved Justice League Heroes, is that that's something that my wife and I bonded over. We started that game, we finished it together, because it was a two-player game. It wasn't an online game, but it was multiplayer.
It was co-op.
If you had the hookup, I think you could do four players and everything. And it's like, I miss that, because now everything is either single player or online. And it's like,
There needs to be more co-op games.
I miss the days, like in my youth, I'd invite my cousins over. Oh God, it sounded like in my day.
And it was snowing, and they had to walk uphill both ways
to get the games and everything. No, but whenever I was a kid, I'd invite my cousins over, and we'd have a weekend, like I said, playing Ninja Turtles or Street Fighter.
Yep, same here.
And we'd just play it like, who needs sleep? We've got a case of Pepsi right beside us.
Yeah, and that was your whole weekend.
And it was. And you didn't need online. And I had more fun doing that than I would playing with some guy who's, you know, halfway across the world or in the States or whatever, because there's no connection.
You knew them.
Yeah.
Yes, it was social. Maybe you're not leaving the house, but it's still social. You're there with your friends, whereas, you know, it promotes hermetism. I don't know if that's a word, but online promotes hermetism.
Yeah, and it does. Yeah,
because
instead of hanging out with your friends, you're hanging out with Starkick 77. You know,
that's a nicer name than I've ever seen online.
Yeah,
that's much too classy.
It works for certain games, and I find this falls more prey to the fighting game and the FPS genres more so than anything. However, I've bonded with people over games, like, for example, Mass Effect 3.
Right.
Yeah, like, we had, like, a squad. Okay, guys, it's Sunday. Here's the weekend Reaper mission. We're going to do it, grab our cool shit, and go home. That's what we did. What was I going to counterpoint here? Man, it was really good, too. I'm thinking here.
We'll try to give you a second to think about it. You're also at the whimsy of your fellow online gamers. Two words. Leroy Jenkins.
Well, that actually just reminded me of exactly what I was going to talk about. You know how you talk about people that sit there and camp and everything?
Yes.
People that buy their way to success. Microtransactions.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm guilty of this, because in Mass Effect 3, let's just say me and Microsoft had a really good relationship. at one point last year. I had 11,000 Microsoft points at one point.
Wow.
I spent them all on Mass Effect 3 gear packs. My wife's giving me the finger. I was loaded. I could have taken on Harbinger myself. That's how powerful I was. And that sucks because not everybody could be at that level.
I'm all for, and you know what? This is something like the Facebook Avengers game suffers from, and games like any micromanaged games. Yes, it's nice that you give the players the option to play for free, but do it in such a way that if I bust my ass playing this game for 40 hours a week for 6 months, that some schlockhead coming in with a credit card.
Yep.
Can't get to my same level in 30 seconds.
Yeah, because that's the problem with the Injustice app. If you want to have all the cool locked in the console version, it'll cost you about $120 to do it via Injustice. Now I've dropped probably about $20 into Injustice since that, because honestly, the Injustice app is actually kind of fun. But yeah, I'm that schmuck with a credit card. I'm that you hate, because you know what?
Yeah.
I don't want to wait. Why should I invest 40 hours? I'm like, man, I've got places to be.
Okay,
at the same time, why is impatience Marvel, rewarded, though?
Yeah. This Marvel Heroes game that's online right now is the same thing. It starts you off with your choice of playing The Thing, Storm, Scarlet Witch, Daredevil, or Hawkeye. And once you pick one, you're stuck with that character, and you have to unlock all the other characters via gameplay or microtransactions. Now, the microtransactions for this game are astronomically high.
Yeah, because a friend
four
of mine,
characters cost you $85.
I think someone
I'm
said,
sorry.
Yeah, I think someone, a friend of mine, it's wants no to buy micro. Squirrel Girl because she's ultra rare. It'll cost them like something like $130 or something. It's like ridiculous.
Yeah, and like on Steam right now, like I was looking at the packs and they're like $84.99, and they have the X-Force pack, which gives you Wolverine, Colossus, Deadpool, and Cable. And then eight different costumes for them for $84.99. It's like, or you could play the game for like 90 hours and get them.
Why? Yeah, no. I made this point already. Why is impatience rewarded? You know, I don't want to wait. Here's some money.
Yeah, but then again, you can argue that because, for example, and this is an example from last year, Battlefield 3.
Yep.
People who pre-ordered the game had a significant advantage over people who didn't pre-order the game because of weapons. Same thing with Call of Duty. If I pre-order, I've got an advantage over you. Honestly, microtransactions can level the field, or they can go skew it right to hell.
And I think the really interesting thing, as we're talking about all these things that sort of like divide and sort of connect people in good or bad ways about these games, is that if you think about it, part of the joy of being people who are obsessed with comics is talking about comics.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, and it's very difficult. Comic nerds love an opportunity to communicate their comic nerdery. And the really interesting thing that video games do is give you one another sort of focused outlet, you know, because reading comics is fundamentally a solitary pursuit. It's very rare that you're reading a comic with somebody else without
other
it being
than
really...
sharing it. It's like, oh, no, don't turn the page. I'm not doing that.
Exactly.
You know, you
exactly.
can't do that, really.
So it goes to that. And then when you're looking at video games, they're the sort of, they're the halfway point between movies and like the actual comics themselves that have a solitary and something that, like you were saying, you can bond with someone playing games.
Yeah.
Like I'd play, my brother and I had like a MAME download and we had all the old Capcom CPS2 arcade games. And we'd take a weekend, get some Dr. Pepper and play through a bunch of Capcom games. It was
See,
fun as hell.
There's a difference though. When you're sitting in an arcade and you're sitting in an arcade machine, you know, this is the whole microtransaction thing with PC gaming and console gaming right now versus the old school arcade. If, for example, I was to challenge you in a game of X-Men versus Street Fighter,
right.
It's your skill versus my skill.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not your wall versus
okay.
my wall.
Okay. Yeah. You know, you can't pump 80 extra quarters in there and have a life bar that's 3 billion hit points long, and I just put one quarter in and get, like, my 10 hit points.
No, but if you beat him... Well, there's nothing stopping him from spending every waking moment pumping quarters in that machine to get better, but he's still actually doing it.
He's doing it. He's earning the skill with microtransactions going, all right, Mike, I'm going to go and use my credit card and give myself all the Mass Effect gear right now. Yeah. That's not that's not skill. You're not getting better at the game.
Yeah.
It's giving it.
But it is buying enjoyment. That's the way I saw it, because when I got all my Mass Effect gear, right, I didn't want to have to keep playing it so I'd be disappointed earning that level up. Now, mind you, now that I've got everything, I'm having a fucking blast. But the thing is to not wave your gaming dick in someone's face.
Well, right.
And that's what a lot of people do, though.
And I think, though, a lot of what goes – what the transition that games have taken is games used to be based on skill. And now it's almost like game companies have pulled away from making games skillful, and they're making them way too easy because people complain. And then you get like, look, it's to the point where I remember being challenged by games. Now when I play games, it's like,
it's not a matter of it's not a matter of if you'll beat it, it's when you'll beat it.
Exactly.
They've evolved to cater to this generation the way everything else has, with two simple words: instant gratification.
Yep.
That's the way everything is, and games have just followed suit.
You sound like such an old man.
I know. Like, I hate it.
Kids today and their instant gratification.
That old man DeHaan always whining about
their pogs and their hacky sacks. And
we had Dr. Pepper, now you and your Coke Zeros.
Coke Zeros. Yeah. I saw something with lime in it. And Crystal Pepsi.
Yeah.
I used to be with it. Then they changed what it was. Now what I'm with isn't it, and what's it is weird and scary to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's me, old man.
Thank you.
No, but I used to be a hardcore like MMO player, like back in the days of Ultima Online and EverQuest. Okay.
Now
I look at things like World of Warcraft, right? World of Warcraft's like, you know, we're the first to do, and I'm like, no, you're not. EverQuest did this crap years before you guys even thought of it.
And World of Warcraft has been the same game for, what, like 7 years now?
Exactly.
They have pandas now.
Yeah, woo! I could be Poe from Kung Fu Panda.
So, you know, games itself are evolving. Now, here's the question going around the table, guys. Gaming in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, what would you like to see happen and change, and what would you like to see stay the same?
Well, I'd like to be able to own my content. I'd like to be able to pass my games around. We'll see what happens after this whole Microsoft One or Xbox One bullshit. Ultimately, I want to see a move back towards story. I want my Arkham whatever. I want a quality game like that for a Marvel property.
Right.
I also want games that are done when they're done. F*** off with the yearly COD, Madden, stuff like that. And what I mean by that is because you're getting franchise fatigue. That's what killed Guitar Hero.
Yeah.
That's what killed Tony Hawk, both of which were fantastic franchises. And then, oh my God, it's June 19th, guys. We got a ship on the 25th of September, man.
What are we going to do? Give him a big plastic board to stand on. Everyone likes that, right?
Yeah, exactly. I want to see time and quality. If that means less AAA releases per year, I'm okay with that. Or give me a really good downloadable game. I'm okay with this.
Yeah, and what I would really like to see is, going back to what I was saying before about Ultimate or the Marvel versus Capcom, is, and especially with stuff like Steam that's allowing relatively small companies to be relatively experimental in their games, I would like to see comic book licenses get relatively opened up and not them guard them so fiercely. You know, give like Iron Fist to an indie company and they could make a really sweet stylized kung fu game with him. You know, be more open to. And because video games no longer have to have that like value in them, they can do a downloadable game
episodic.
They can, but there's so much freedom there, and there's so many cool things that you can do with art design, that you can do with characters. You don't have to be stuck in that same rut, and to allow comic characters to sort of breathe more in video games. I think that would be really exciting, because there's a lot of smaller characters that are never going to get a big game. You know, like Green Lantern, I don't think it's going to be anytime soon before he comes back. But like there are tons of characters that could be explored,
especially
more
with these smaller companies, because you never know what's going to hit. Like this, again, it's not a comic book game or whatever, but look at the success that like something like Angry Birds took.
Yeah.
It's, and the idea behind it is so simplistic.
Or Limbo. Stuff yeah. like that.
You know, or like those run games. Oh, what is it? Like
any free run.
Don't even get me going on things like Terraria or Minecraft.
Temple Run, yeah. Yeah, or, you know, something like that. But I mean, the simplicity of those games applied to, you know, maybe a B or C Marvel character, it's
give it
not,
the telltale.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Yeah.
It's not like a big screen movie where, you know, if it flops, it might ruin the character. If you make an Iron Fist game and it flops,
you know what might be cool?
Send him back to the comics.
Do this for a PAX showcase. Okay, guys, Marvel has opened up the licenses to these characters. You have a year to make a game. The best five get presented at PAX.
That would be outstanding, yeah.
And then the top three who make the most money during downloads get to get their games
make
published
the full game,
on Xbox Live or something.
Because they could do, like I can just think, Squirrel Girl. There's tons you can do there that would just be goofy and fun.
And you could be goofy and fun, exactly, with it, because she's not necessarily serious.
Or if you
want to
take, like, a weirder character, like, say, Sleepwalker.
Yes.
Make it just this really weird, trippy Limbo or Insane Shadow Planet.
You must escape the 90s.
Yeah. Like, there could be a lot of really neat possibilities there.
Yeah, which is one of the things that I would love to see is more indie companies be able to get their hands on these properties, because I've been having much more fun with indie games lately than I have with stuff put out by the big companies, because the big companies are as Mike has said, production deadlines and
Whereas,
like, an indie company, well, we can't go any lower.
Yeah.
You know, it's all up from here, so they give it their all.
See, that's why I like companies like the guys who made Skyrim, Bethesda. It'll be done when it's done. Or same with, like, Mirror's Edge 2 and DICE. When it's done, it's done. That's how game companies should approach it. Not, oh, Christ, guys, we got a deadline. You know, never farm out stuff you know will be amazing. I mean, yeah, there's always going to be shovelware.
Yeah.
It's just, that's just the way it is. But it's not to say you can't make something epic. Like games like Halo, COD, Madden, they have, you know, those teams will make those deadlines because they're just going to keep throwing money at it until it's awesome. But if you have to wait 2 to 3 years for an awesome Spider-Man game or Green Lantern, Superman, or even, say, Deadshot game, I'll wait. I'll take the time.
And you know what? Especially if you know it's going to be good. Like, you know, Arkham Asylum was fantastic.
And it took 3+ years of development.
Exactly. But whenever, you know, so when Arkham City was announced, you know, that was it. Everybody loved it. And they couldn't wait. And there was that anticipation that I feel like you don't get as often anymore. Especially with, you know, so much downloadable content that comes with these games now. They just kind of keep going, which is good for the shelf life of a single game. But part of me misses, you know, the idea of the sequel, because you don't get that as often. And
right,
it's not the same with the franchise games, because they come out every year. You know there's going to be a Madden, a NBA, a WWE 13, 14, 15, 16. That's what happens.
Yeah.
But I miss the idea of a sequel, you know?
And I think it all ties into one of the big ideas that now, with Marvel being bought out by Disney and Warner Brothers and the DC connection, there is a certain commodification of a lot of the properties, which brings with it a lot of, like, oh, you know, Squirrel Girl might hit it big with people in a few years, so we should hold on to her and be fiercely protective of her, because God knows Luke Cage's babysitter needs them again.
Yeah.
Avengers versus DuckTales.
Yeah, exactly.
I would buy that in a heartbeat. But anyway, guys, we've run out of time, so I imagine we'll probably revisit this topic again, either on this show or on the prototype, so I enjoy talking about this. And you know how I know it's time to go, guys?
Oh.
Because I gotta go.
On that note,
so for this wonderful inventive, we're playing on the NES satellite today. We have been
Jamie McBurney,
Jeff DeHaan.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd,
and I'm Chris Peddle. And remember, up, up, down, down, left, right, A, B, select, start. That's our cheat code. Have a good night.
That's it! He's been kidnapped by the ghost of Liberace!